You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. On further review, the Ukrainian electrical grid hack seems to have been designed to do far more damage than it actually accomplished. Inferat is scouting for access to cryptocurrency wallets. A sophisticated threat actor is using SimJacker for surveillance on phones in the Middle East. The Cynet 16 have been announced. A penetration test goes bad due to a misunderstanding of scope. And Baltimore decides, hey, you know, it might be a good idea to back up our files. From the CyberWire studios at Datatribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Friday, September 13th, 2019. The industrial security specialists at Dragos have published a reassessment of the 2016 crash override attack on a portion of Ukraine's power grid. They now believe that the attack was probably intended to disrupt operations for weeks or months, as opposed to the hours the actual outage lasted. They also think that the threat actor, which they track as Electrum, and which is widely regarded as working on behalf of Russian intelligence, intended the destruction of some pieces of equipment. Electrum now seems to be taking an interest in other sectors' industrial control systems, and those interests appear to extend beyond Ukraine. So, as troubling as the attacks were, Dragos thinks Ukraine actually dodged the metaphorical bullet. One of the tools they found when investigating the incident seems to have been designed to induce a denial-of-service condition on protective relays. Thus, once power was restored, the relays would no longer provide the overcurrent protection they were designed to deliver. This is troubling because it would have exposed transmission equipment to power surges that could have physically damaged them, requiring lengthy repair or even replacement. Some of these devices have long replacement lead times, and this could have disrupted power delivery for an extended period of time. Why didn't this happen? For two reasons. First, the attackers apparently affected fewer relays than intended, and second, their DDoS code was flawed and not as effective as they'd have hoped. But the whole matter is sobering, and one hopes is being taken with due seriousness by utilities everywhere. Again, it's not just Ukraine and it's not just power distribution. Think in terms of risks to water and other essentials, too. Security firm Zscaler has described Inferat, a remote access Trojan designed to steal cryptocurrency wallet information. It looks like a criminal operation. The rat does what most rats do, goes after access and information, but it's particularly interested not only in cryptocurrencies, but also in the browser cookies where coin wallet usernames and passwords are so often stashed. It's also capable of taking screenshots for much the same purpose, and it's armed with the usual array of enabling tools like keeping an eye out for active antivirus software. Adaptive Mobile Security yesterday announced the discovery of SimJacker, a vulnerability and associated exploits in which an SMS is used to effectively hijack a mobile device's SIM card. The company says that a sophisticated threat actor has been exploiting SimJacker in the wild for at least 2 years. The attacks collect geolocation data and other information from the affected phones. The purpose of the exploitation appears to be surveillance. Most of the affected devices have been in the Middle East. Adaptive Mobile says that while geolocation seems to be of most interest to the current attackers, SimJacker could also be used for other purposes, like distributing disinformation by SMS. The Cynet 16 have been announced. This annual selection of the most innovative, potentially disruptive companies in the cybersecurity industry picks 16 winners from an international pool of applicants. This year's selection was made from among 161 companies based in 18 countries, from North America to Europe, to Asia, and to Oceania. Some of these names you may already be familiar with, but you're likely to hear more from and about them in the future. In reverse alphabetical order, the Cynet 16 class of 2019 includes XM Cyber, which specializes in fully automatic breach and attack simulation that enables customers to recognize attack vectors and prioritize their remediation. Tigera, whose Zero Trust network security supports continuous compliance for Kubernetes platforms across a range of environments. Tempered Networks, which provides simple and affordable means of segmenting and isolating control systems and industrial Internet of Things devices. Sunrise Security, with a cloud data control service that delivers a risk model for identity and data relationships across a range of cloud and third-party data stores. Cymplify, an independent security orchestration, automation, and response provider, whose workbench enables enterprises and managed security service providers to manage and respond to cyber threats. OPAC delivers security as a service from its cloud that enables enterprises to overcome staffing and management challenges in the protection of their IT infrastructure. Kenna Security, whose platform delivers cyber risk predictions that enable security teams to get ahead of exploitation. Karamba's embedded cybersecurity solutions protect connected systems with automated runtime integrity software that does particularly well against remote code execution. CyberSponse, which offers an automated incident response orchestration platform that automates security tools to make human experts more effective. CryptoMove, whose continuous moving target defense and distributed fragmentation offers a new approach to data protection for managing keys and DevSecOps secrets. BigID, a machine learning shop that enables personal data discovery, correlation, and privacy automation for compliance at scale with regulations like GDPR and CCPA. Balbix, whose specialized artificial intelligence deliver continuous and predictive assessment of breach risk. Awake Security, which offers advanced network traffic analysis for a privacy-aware solution that can detect and visualize incidents in full forensic context. Arcos Labs, which solves fraud by pairing global telemetry with an enforcement challenge to control fraud without false positives or degraded throughput. Aqua Security, which secures container-based and cloud-native applications from development to production. And finally, Excepto, which delivers continuous identity access protection by inferring contextual data to analyze and verify user identity and behavior. Our congratulations to all of them, and as we've said earlier, we're sure you'll be hearing from them in the future. Here's a disquieting story out of the American heartland that illustrates the importance of the customer's understanding exactly what the scope of a penetration test will be. A pair of coal-fire pen testers were arrested during an engagement at the Dallas County, Iowa courthouse. The Des Moines Register says that the Iowa Judicial Branch did indeed hire them to conduct penetration testing of court records, but that the court administrators did not expect physical penetration to be within the scope of the job. We hope the misunderstanding is cleared up soon. And finally, the Baltimore Sun reports that Baltimore has gotten around to realizing or at least acknowledging that it permanently lost some data in May's ransomware attack. The city now thinks backups are a good idea.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
And joining me once again is Johannes Ulrich. He's the Dean of Research at the SANS Technology Institute, and he's also the host of the ISC Stormcast podcast. Johannes, it's always great to have you back. You have been tracking some web spam systems that are using some stealthy methods here. What are you looking at?
Oh, what's happening here is you may have seen that you're clicking on the link you're not supposed to click on, and you're ending up at a compromised website that essentially delivers spam, some advertisement for some product you probably don't want to buy. What usually happens here is a website gets compromised, an attacker will place that page on that website. The problem the attacker has, and well, attackers have problems too sometimes, is it's not all that straightforward for an attacker to necessarily update these pages. What they have done sometimes is, for example, set up some JavaScript on that page that will then go out and fetch some HTML snippet from some backend server that the attacker runs and copy that data into the page. But these outbound requests, of course, go to other compromised web pages. And overall, this is a relatively fragile kind of setup. What attackers have done lately is they have discovered DNS. Now, in the past, there wasn't really a good way to sort of do a free form DNS request with JavaScript. But more recently, we have this new protocol, DNS over HTTPS. So what an attacker can do now, the attacker can use JavaScript's ability to send HTTPS requests to, for example, the Cloudflare DNS over HTTPS endpoint and use them to then do DNS requests. So the attacker now only has to manage a couple of DNS text records and deposit a JavaScript on the vulnerable page. The victim will really only see outbound HTTPS requests to Cloudflare, some of these sort of well-known services, which of course now is much more difficult to detect as an anomaly.
So what are your recommendations for folks to get on top of this?
Really, what you have to do is you have to, first of all, make sure that your website isn't vulnerable. And what we typically see here is your standard vulnerable Drupal page or some of these, you know, big content management systems that are all too often vulnerable. Secondly, watch for outbound requests from your web server. Really take a close look at them. There's only very little that really should connect outbound from a web server to HTTPS sites. You may have some automatic updates running. Maybe you want to pull this in-house and set up your internal server that distributes these updates. That's usually a better way to go anyway if you want to sort of get control of your update mechanisms and block as much as possible of these outbound HTTPS requests. Of course, ideally, for the remaining HTTPS requests that you do have to allow, Yes, you may set up some HTTPS proxy or so that should allow you to block these DNS over HTTPS requests.
And how widespread is this? What are you seeing there?
We don't really see it a lot yet. It really showed up just in a couple cases, but it's one of those things I really expect to become more popular because it's very easy to copy this idea, so there isn't really much to it. An attacker who realizes, hey, this is actually how I am able to fly under the radar, and now my spam sites will survive a little bit longer than they used to survive before I did that. So I think it will probably pick up pretty quickly.
All right. Well, Johannes Ulrich, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
My guest today is Rosa Smothers. She's Senior Vice President of Cyber Operations at KnowBe4. Rosa Smothers will be one of the speakers at our upcoming Women in Cybersecurity reception at the Spy Museum in Washington, D.C., and KnowBe4 is one of our sponsors for the event. I began our conversation by asking her what sparked her initial interest in technology.
Admittedly, probably growing up as a total Star Trek nerd had a lot to do with that. So I had a computer at a very young age, thanks to parents who really wanted me to learn technology and not be intimidated by it. So I give a lot of credit to them for that. My first computer was a used Commodore VIC-20 with a tape drive, like an actual cassette tape drive.
I remember those days.
And it was just, to me, it was the gateway to another universe. And then, you know, things progressed. And then I had a computer with a modem and went on to bulletin boards. And then we all gained access to what we're now calling the internet. So that was, you know, a lot of the late 80s and the 90s. So I grew up with that movement. And so that was an exciting time. I was really fortunate to see all of that growth as it transpired.
And so what were your thoughts as you headed off to college?
I didn't think about the idea of formal education as much as I should have. I really started out, I was so good with computers and networking and security and things that I actually started working full time and making a great living before I obtained my bachelor's degree. So I had an associate's. Actually, it was September 11 that changed the trajectory of my life in a rather dramatic way because after the attack, I decided I wanted to go work for the government and go fight the bad guys. So I left my job and went back to school full time, and I did a junior and senior year in 1 year's time. And then was initially hired on at the Defense Intelligence Agency. I worked there for about 2.5 years as a cyber threat analyst focusing on Al-Qaeda, and then transitioned at that point over to the Central Intelligence Agency, where I was for a little over 11 years, almost 12 years.
Can you give us some insights as to what the atmosphere was like in those days? I can imagine there was a lot of focus on the mission at that time.
You know, I think it was a jolt for our country. It was a jolt for the intelligence community. It's sometimes until an emergency happens that our agencies can't necessarily obtain the funding they need for the fight. And so once, God forbid, this emergency happened, the intelligence community received a huge surplus of funding So there was a hiring surge. There was a surge in technology, procurement, and research. Everything that you can think of, because it was such a dire need to expand in the area of counterterrorism that we really hadn't thought much about since, you know, Khobar Towers, the initial attack on the World Trade Center, and even the Hezbollah attacks in Lebanon. So it was the immediacy of it spurred so many things into action so rapidly.
And what was it like for you in terms of it being an opportunity for an environment in which to learn?
It's not an understatement to say that the scope and depth of our intelligence community's resources is truly mind-boggling. So for anyone who loves a great learning opportunity, which I certainly do, I'm an avid reader, learning about all of the tools, techniques, and procedures, if you will, that are available to us for fighting the good fight, it was quite an enlightening and often daunting experience.
Now, as you looked around during that time, when you were finishing up your education and then beginning your government career, were there very many other women who were there along with you?
There were women in the intelligence community, certainly, but not as nearly as many specifically in the technical field as much as I would hope. And that's certainly not to say that the intelligence community isn't doing their darndest to hire qualified personnel of, you know, any gender, any cultural status, any minority status. I think the challenge as I see it is also it's really stimulating the interest in technology when they're young. I was so gratified when I read recently that the Girl Scouts are now giving out STEM badges, and I think it's things like that that are going to increase the role of women in the cyber workplace, because, you know, they can't hire us if we're not there and we're not qualified. So I'm hoping as time goes by, our numbers will increase and the hiring pool will thus increase. I'm often asked, when, you know, and I travel a lot for my position here at Nobifor, and so whenever I'm having those conversations next to people in the airplane on a long flight, and I'm asked, you know, what would, you know, I have a son, I have a daughter, they're 13, 14, 15, what would you do? I start with giving them my business card and letting them know I'd be happy to talk with them at any time to encourage them. But the one thing that I always try to drive home, especially even if they're small children, there are so many apps out there that are learning opportunities, even for computer programming, for coding. There's such a dire need for good coding out there, and we're definitely not filling that bill. So that's something that I always encourage people to consider, you know, finding those apps in the various app stores that can help kids learn and in a fun way, because, you know, it's not only a constructive use of their time, but it's also can bolster those technical skills and provide them a really promising career. They will always have job security with a skill set like that.
I want to touch on our upcoming Women in Cybersecurity reception, which you're going to be a part of, and we're grateful for Nobifor for being a sponsor of. Why do you think events like this are important? Why do they matter?
Anytime you can build community and consensus, it's an important thing. I mean, we're social animals. And anytime we can come together and share similar experiences or challenges and be frank and open and honest. And I think sometimes it's also providing a blunt series of feedback regarding sometimes we're not as forthcoming or as forthright, I should say, as forthright in the workplace as we should be. I've had a number of conversations with women that, you know, they struggle with that, you know, I want to be liked and I want to be respected. And I said, well, if you're doing your job well, that respect will come. Don't worry about those things. These will all come in due course. You know, focus on your technical skills, So I think in encouraging one another to be strong, to stand up, to not be quite so docile. You know, a lot of women tend to say, you know, I was just wondering. No, you have a question. Hmm. You know, it's a different way of making the same statement, but they sound very different to those who hear it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's even those sort of little coaching moments, I think, are hugely significant. So I think any community building opportunity, especially for women in the technical field, should always be taken full advantage of.
That's Rosa Smothers. She's the Senior Vice President of Cyber Operations at KnowBefore. You can find out more about our Women in Cybersecurity reception by going to thecyberwire.com/WCS. And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.